I don't think there's a dime that's been put out that couldn't be matched with another dime and no harm done. So that's tonight's Horn Solo. Join us tomorrow evening at 11 p.m. Eastern Time. With any luck at all, we'll have a full-blown horn section for you. In the meantime, however, here's the late, great Lowell George, especially given this last story, reminding you to...
To you know, what we use on stage, but it's very, very special because if you can see,
yeah,
the numbers all go to 11. Look, right across the board, 11, oh, 11,
and most
11,
of the amps go up to 10.
Exactly.
Does that mean it's louder? Is it any louder?
Well, it's one louder, isn't it? It's not 10. You see, most blokes are going to be playing at 10. You're on 10 here, all the way up, all the way up,
yeah,
all the way up. You're on 10 on your guitar. Where can you go from there? Where?
I don't know.
Nowhere, exactly. What we do is, if we need that extra push over the cliff, you know what we do?
Put it up to 11.
11, exactly. One louder.
Why don't you just make 10 louder and make 10 be the top number and make that a little louder?
These go to 11.
Welcome to Conversation Radio's Lean, Mean, and Green Show, right here on the Horn. It's Foxed Up with John Fox, where we turn the conversation to conservation. Foxed Up is brought to you by B1 Louder Productions in Sydney, Australia, and CityNet, citynet.net. B1 Louder by ringing 877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 877-443-2366, or use your free minutes by dialing direct 304-658-5453. Yeah. Your host, the ranting, head-banging hippie, John Fox.
All right, everybody. Welcome aboard Foxed Up here for a Thursday night. And, wow, I tell you, that has got to be the quickest hour. The horn section seems to go by in about half the time my own show does. But it's just because we're having so much fun. And I'm really glad that everybody's enjoying it as much as we do. What do we got today? Well, we get to return to kind of some normal Thursday night programming. And we do have a Billy Shears music segment tonight, one that's been in the can for a while, but due to many different reasons, usually my problems, we haven't had the normal Friday show thing going on, or Thursday show, rather. It's my Friday. And this one's been in the can for about a month. And I'm so glad we're finally getting to it. My apologies to Mr. Shears. And today his subject is Mr. Jamie Cullum. And I got to say, I'm not that familiar with the young man. But I don't know if you folks in the States are familiar with basically the UK's version of Johnny Carson, Michael Parkinson. And he just actually had his final broadcast recently, and it was just aired last week here in Australia. And very, very kind of old school interviewer. And Mr. Jamie Cullum was his musical guest for the day, and I was very impressed with the performance. A really nice throwback to the jazz piano man, but there's a very rocky edge to his voice, and I thought it was great that I got to see it before airing this segment, because I was most impressed, and he's a hell of a piano player. So we're sure we're going to go just a moment, and I had a couple of other things lined up for the show. However, our good friend Annette from West Virginia in the chat room sent me a couple of stories which I think follow on from yesterday's show, the, you know, 2008 being the reckoning for King Cole. And we're going to get to that. More positive developments in the world of Dirty Cole and maybe bringing it to an end, but we'll get there. And I am becoming more and more heartened that I think we're going to see something real take place in the area of ending Cole's free reign as the dirtiest, nastiest power source we have. Like I covered last night, you know, four states, including Kansas and Texas, have blocked permits for new coal-fired power plants because they're saying, well, until your sequestration processes move from myth to reality, you can't have the permits. And I think this is a brilliant way to handle it. Until it becomes a reality, you don't get the permits. You don't get the money. You don't get the free rein to continue kind of dumping this crap into our atmosphere and dumping the crap into the waterways of the Appalachian Mountains. But I think first we will get to Mr. Billy Shear's segment. And like I said, this is Jimmy Cullum. I did check a little bit of this out earlier today, and again, it's another great segment from Mr. Billy Shear's, and we'll get back into doing these on a much more regular basis over the next few weeks. I know I've been frustrating the man, and again, my apologies for that. So without further ado, Bob, why don't we go ahead and run Billy Shear's music for this week?
This is the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
Jamie Cullum is an English pop and jazz singer-songwriter. Although primarily a jazz artist, Cullum performs in a wide range of styles and is generally regarded as a crossover artist with his musical roots firmly based in jazz. I wanted to feature Cullum this week mainly because of his song, Next Year Baby, a great composition, especially since we're about to ring in the new year. I'll play Next Year Baby at the end of this segment. But first, here's some interesting info on Jamie Cullum.
Heart's gone astray, deep in her when they go. I went away just when you needed me so. You won't regret, I'll come back begging you. Won't you forget, welcome love we once knew. Open up your eyes, then realize, here is step of my everlasting love. I need you by my side, girls would be my pride. Never be denied, everlasting love.
Jamie Collum is asked why he got into music and how he got into the music industry.
A huge question. I mean, you know, many different ways. I mean, really, I was just copying my brother. But I was a listener to music before I was a player. I loved to listen, so I tried to play things on the guitar first. I wanted to be Kurt Cobain, and I wanted to be in the Red Hot Chili Peppers, and I wanted to be in Rage Against the Machine, and I wanted to be in Iron Maiden and AC/DC and all the hard rock bands and stuff. So I kind of copied them for a while. Yeah, and then I got into like hip hop and DJing and stuff, and I started hearing samples of Herbie Hancock and Miles Davis and stuff, and found my way into jazz that way, really. Well, I made a couple of independent records, that was the main thing. And then after I'd done that, I was gigging and doing lots of gigs and stuff, just my own funding it myself and getting the gigs myself. And gradually, you know, I got a review in the newspaper and Universal started turning up and they found me, really. I didn't go to any record companies at all.
Here, he is asked what he plans to do with all the money he is making now.
Ah, well, you see, this is one of the great music industry fallacies, you know. Selling a million records does not mean I get a lot of money, because they spent so much money on promoting it, you see, and they have to make it back before I get any.
Jamie Collum has a real knack for taking a great song and making it his own. Here he talks about covering the Jeff Buckley song, Lover, You Should Have Come Over. Here's a bit of the original, then Collum's cover.
Looking out the door, I see the rain fall upon the funeral mourners, parading in a wake of sad relations as their shoes fill up with water. Maybe I'm too young to keep good love from going wrong, but tonight you're on my mind, so you'll never know. Broken down and hungry for your love, but no.
Jeff Buckley's one of my great heroes, you know. And when I hear that song on his record, funny, because it's a very, do you know the original version of the song? Do you know it? It's
going to play live then.
Yes, wonderful, yeah. It's very dramatic. It's very, it's theatre, you know, it's intense, it's very long, it's very unruly. And when I heard it, of course, love it, you know, he's one of my favourite artists. But I heard a pop song, Struggling to Get Out, so I kind of extracted the chorus, extracted the verses, and extracted the bridge, and kind of condensed it, did a Reader's Digest version of the song, and try to make it sound like Donny Hathaway.
So I'll wait for you, and I'll burn. Oh, will I ever see your sweet return? Oh, will I ever learn? Oh, lover, you should have come over. It's not too late. Open window lets the rain in. Burning in the corner is the only one who dreams he had you with him.
Now, as promised, Jamie Collum with Next Year Baby. Happy New Year to you all.
Next year, things are gonna change. Gonna drink less beer and start all over again.
again. Gonna read more books. Gonna keep up with the news. Gonna learn how to cook. Spend less money on shoes. I'll pay my bills on time. File my mail away every day. Only drink the finest wine. Call my gran every Sunday with resolutions. Well, baby, they come and go. Will I do any of these things? The answer's probably no. If there's one thing I must do, despite my greatest fears, I'm gonna say to you, I felt all of these years next year.
Towards the end. Wow! That's fantastic. And like I said, you know, I kind of got a taste of what he's like live with that band on television. I think it was just this past weekend. And really, really good. Great arrangements. And I like his influences. All of them. Now, thanks very much, Billy Shears. I'm sorry that it took so long to get to that, to the point where your New Year's message was a little dated, but hey, everyone knows, everyone understands. And, yeah, just fantastic. Great, great stuff. And I love, you know, I think seeing a young guy like this, pop up doing this jazz influence thing, I reckon, is a bit of a reaction to counter the lack of liveness in so much of the popularized music of the day. And, you know, getting back to, you know, saying, hey, you know, I'm going to break the mold here. I'm going to really, really peeve off the touring company and say, I'm taking 20 people on the road. It's expensive. That's a big show to do. And the current system doesn't look on that stuff very nicely. They say, what do you mean you want to take all these people that we have to pay and feed and transport and house and insure and all these other things, you know? We want you to just go out there with a piano, a microphone, and a backing track. Come on, get with the program. But if you're not in the chat room, and I don't know why you aren't, because if you're, you know, streaming, unless you're at work or something, you should really pop into the Head On Radio Network chat room. And ELO's just sent this link for a protest of the FAA, rooftop protest from CNN that is an absolute riot. It's brilliant. And I can't read the URL over the air. It would take half the show. Anyway, great stuff. Okay, Bob, why don't we take a quick break? I'm going to get my stuff together, and then we're going to talk about, well, coal losing its foothold little by little. So stick around, folks. You're listening to Fox Up here on the Head On Radio Network, America's liberal voice. And, wow, I love this place. I love you guys. This is just too cool what we do, and every once in a while it comes back to me how special this experience is. So stick around. We'll be back in a bit.
You're listening to the Head On Radio Network.
When the last eagle flies over the last crumbling mountain, and the last lion roars at the last dusty fountain, in the shadow of the forest, though she may be old and worn, they will stand unbelieving at the last unicorn.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95.
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
America's most dangerous investigative reporter, Greg Palast, joins Bob Kincaid for a bit of conversation radio.
But I have to tell you, this is such a pleasure to be able to actually lay it out.
Greg, anytime you want to lay it out, okay? We're reinventing things here. We call it conversation radio. We're very serious about that. And anytime you've got one of those that's a bit of a Gordian knot, bring it here, please, because there are people hungry for information and who are willing to, you know, this is not the Fox audience. We actually sit and think about stuff.
I like it. That's why I like this. It's the head-on radio network as opposed to the head-off television
right.
network that we've been suffering with. So I do appreciate your work, and let's set up another time. Take it easy, buddy.
Indeed. Take care, Greg. Thank you so much.
Head On with Bob Kincaid, weeknights, 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern, here on America's Liberal Voice, the Head On Radio Network.
Got a pony dog craving for a fight.
Hello, may I help you?
Hello, can I ask you a few questions about the apartment you have on Park Street?
What was your name?
My name is Juan Hernandez.
It's been rented.
Oh, it's gone?
Hello?
Hello, my name is Sanjay Kumar. I am calling about the apartment on Park Street.
It's not available.
It's not available, but I just now saw it in the paper.
May I help you?
Hi, my name is Tyrone Washington. I'm calling about a place to rent on Park Street.
No longer available.
It's not available now.
Nope, sorry.
Oh, okay.
Hello?
Yes, hello. My name is Graham Wellington. I'm calling about the apartment for rent on Park Street. Is that still available?
Yes, it is.
Oh, it is?
Yes.
Oh, really? I'd love to make an appointment.
Housing discrimination is illegal. If you think you've been a victim because of your race, color, national origin, sex, religion, disability, or family status, call 800-669-9777 or visit fairhousinglaw.org. Fair housing, it's not an option, it's the law. Brought to you by HUD, the Ad Council, and LCCREF.
On a hot summer night, would...
Nice one, Bob.
Great song.
Everybody, welcome back to Fox Up here. And Nanette sent me a couple of stories here earlier that actually I'm going to hold off on 1 second because David just brought up a really good thing that I need to mention. I can't even tell you how upset I am about the end of the Kucinich campaign. What the media and his own party did to that man is unforgivable. The one guy with ideas and willing to speak and willing to actually fight on behalf of the very issues that I hold as being most important is gone. And now, as we get down to a two-man horse race, or sorry, two-person horse race, once they get rid of Edwards, we have two coal industry ass lickers for candidates, and I hate it. And I was very happy that Bob played that little MP3 of Taps that I sent him, because that's all I could think of when I first heard the news. So anyway, getting to the meat of things, from Nanette, and I reckon our friends at Coal River Mountain Watch and others on the MTR fight will be very happy about this news. From, what is this, the West Virginia Gazette. Via the Associated Press. Supreme Court to rehear the Massey-Caperton case. It's amazing what a few pictures can do. West Virginia Supreme Court unanimously voted Thursday to reconsider its reversal of a $76.3 million judgment against Massey Energy Company. In a case roiled by conflict of interest allegations directed at the justices, the 5-0 decision erases November's ruling that had overturned a 3-2 verdict won by Harmon Mining Company and its president, Hugh Caperton, in a coal contract dispute with Massey. Chief Justice Elliot Spike Maynard did not take part in Thursday's action. He recused himself after the release of vacation photos showing him with Don Blankenship. Massey's chairman, president, and CEO, while the judgment was headed for approval. Hampshire County Circuit Judge Donald Cookman replaced Maynard for the rehearing petition. Justice Brent Benjamin and Larry Starcher also took part in weathered allegations of bias regarding Massey as well. The Supreme Court will hear arguments in the case March 12 and will allow written pleadings from each side, court spokesman Jennifer Bundy said. A 2002 Boone County jury had concluded that Massey hijacked a coal supply contract from Harmon, plunging both it and Caperton into bankruptcy. The verdict awarded $50 million to Harmon and Caperton, with a post-trial interest increasing the amount to $76.3 million. And the only way to get someone like Blankenship is to nail him where it hurts, his pocketbook, because that's all that son of a bitch cares about. Caperton. Right, it's Bob's telling me. It's misspelled, actually, in the article. I was just reading it as I saw it. But anyway, this is good. This is good stuff. I'm being told how to pronounce it. Very fine. No worries. I stand corrected. I think, you know, I'm hoping that this will shed some light on how manipulated the West Virginia court system is when it comes to Blankenship and his operation. Now, I know this is between him and another coal outfit, but it's the conflict of interest that is just that really is the most important part of this, I think. And I'm very happy to see these things. And the other story that she showed me here, and I, you know, anything that hurts the coal companies or makes them actually have to be responsible for what they do, I think is a good thing. And out of the Salt Lake Tribune, Crandall Canyon, survivors of mine cave-in victims preparing lawsuit. The first lawsuit, the first lawsuit stemming from August Crandall Canyon mine disaster is formally taking shape. Claims notices were sent Wednesday to the Intermountain Power Agency and the Los Angeles Department of Water and Power by attorneys for heirs of seven miners killed in a pair of mine wall collapses, along with two miners injured in the ill-fated rescue effort. The notice is required when lawsuits are imminent against government entities do not make reference to the Crandall Canyon mine operator, Utah American Energy Incorporated, or its parent company, Murray Energy Corporation. But Ed Havis, I'll have more, thanks. No. A Salt Lake City attorney representing the 26 claimants said litigation against Murray entities and others is possible and indeed likely in the future. No monetary damage claims were specified. Intermountain Power Agency is the co-owner of the Emery County mine. Much of the mine's extracted coal goes to IPA's power plants outside the Delta. The Los Angeles Department is identified as an agent of the IPA, serving as a co-managing entity on behalf of cities that have shares in IPA and the electricity it produces. Based on state laws, South Jordan-based IPA has 60 days to respond, blah, 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 blah. But later on it says, six miners, Carrie Aldred, Don Erickson, Luis Hernandez, Juan Carlos Payan, Brandon Phillips, and Manuel Sanchez were extracting coal from the South Barrier Pillar in the mine's west main section on August 6th. When they were trapped by a major collapse of the mine walls. 10 days after a rescue effort ensued, Brandon Kimber was killed and colleague Casey Metcalf and Joseph Randy Bolden were injured in a second implosion of the mine walls. Two other miners were killed and four who were injured in that incident are not part of the claim. Minutes of monthly meetings between Crandall Canyon's co-owners, IPA and Murray Energy, revealed that officials discussed a sizable ground failure in March that drove crews out of the North Barrier Pillar in the mine's west mains. Some engineering changes were made, and a plan approved by the Federal Mine Safety and Health Administration allowed crews to move into the South Barrier Pillar to continue retreat mining, in which coal pillars supporting the roof are carved away. But the catastrophic collapse occurred August 6th, about 900 feet from the March failure. And I just love the idea of a good attorney going after bastards like this. because they couldn't give a damn about these miners. They don't give a damn. Ah, we broke some. We'll just get some more. Just like that Blazing Saddles bit about the push cart, you know. They don't care about the two guys going down the quicksand, but that's a plenty good push cart we're losing there. That cost me a ton. They'd be worried more about the equipment than the humans involved. But again, following on from what we were talking about yesterday, these things that are starting to happen are going to shed light nationally on just the horrendous activity of these coal companies. And Annette's got a great point. You never remove any barrier pillars in any operation. I mean, the concept of it just sounds stupid. You're going to pull out the major supports for the mine? What's the point? I'd like someone to explain to me what the point of the operation is. Is it just that, you know, as you collapse the thing, you get the coal that falls down? It's just, you know, like I said, I was saying yesterday, it's going to take a national movement for things like mountaintop removal mining to end. And I've said before, you know, unions maybe that represent coal miners might not like things that I have to say. But in my mind, I think we should no longer be putting good men and women down dark, deep, dangerous holes in which to power our civilization. I think it's incredible. I think it's absolutely incredible. I would much rather retrain these people in the new technologies, where we'll create more jobs. Because, you know, I could see these coal companies saying, oh, well, if you don't like us sending them down into holes, well, then we just got to blow the tops off of mountains. That's safer. But then it feeds into the argument of, but you're taking our jobs away. Well, I'm sorry. Or I'm not sorry, it is time to grow up. Money and profit is not the be-all, end-all for everything. And I think folks need to not just think about the fact that they're getting paid, but what they're doing for that pay. Sounds very high and mighty for me. But I just don't see why. When we do have options now, that if we put the investment into them and say we had a national strategy, shock horror, to develop the infrastructure for these new technologies, we would be creating more jobs. And just to clarify, MTR does not create jobs. It takes them. Because it's huge pieces of machinery run by skeleton crews. It's not the labor-intensive way when you actually go down the hole. So, I mean, there's going to be straw man arguments from both sides. And as I was talking about yesterday, the coal industry is, you know, in the midst of a media effort and a PR effort to try and distort the discussion. And we have to keep screaming loud and clear with our collective voices that they're lying, that they're destroying homes, They're destroying lives, and the very product that they're pulling out of the ground is slowly killing all of us. Whether it's the pollution itself, directly causing respiratory problems and the like, and then the global warming issues of the carbon and the mercury, and the fact that they have the gall to be pushing this liquefied coal crap, which it is, it's crap. The amount of water that it will take to liquefy this stuff, when water is going to become one of the most precious resources, as our tiny little blue dot changes. You know, Waterworld was a horrible movie, but the message was spot on. Bob says here, 8 gallons of water per gallon of liquid coal at least. At least. And I don't have the story up here, but Gene sent me a link yesterday that there are some nuclear power plants in the South that will have to actually throttle back because of water shortages to run the cooling systems. So as water becomes more scarce, especially clean water, and from what I understand, the water used to liquefy coal can never be reclaimed. Just like, as we know, the lands that are cleared due to mountaintop removal mining, at this point in time, we found no way to grow anything on them. We have to keep up, you know, anyone that turns to me and says, you know, you bloody hippie tree hugger, I look at him and just say, you say that like it's a bad thing. I'll wear that in big red letters, front and back on a t-shirt. I'm a tree hugging hippie. I want world peace. I want a clean planet. Jesus. And you know, it really just makes no sense. The only people that this works for are people like Blankenship. Gene's just popped up in the chat, say, conjuring me? I love our ninjas, they're great. Here, he's just sent me the link to save me having to look for it. Drought could force nuke plant shutdowns. Lake Norman, North Carolina. Nuclear reactors across the southeast could be forced to throttle back or temporarily shut down later this year because drought is drying up the rivers and lakes that supply power plants with the awesome amounts of cooling water they need to operate. Utility officials say such shutdowns probably wouldn't result in blackouts, but they could lead to shockingly higher electric bills for millions of Southerners because the region's utilities may be forced to buy expensive replacement power from other energy companies. And this whole thing of the electrical trading thing, as we know from the Enron debacle, this could be setting up for another profiteering disaster. So, as we run into more and more drought problems across the world, you have people pushing for things like liquefied coal and more nuclear energy plants, which require huge amounts of water. I mean huge amounts of water. And as Bob says, these plants require a very, very narrow temperature range in which to operate and be safe. So this isn't just about them keeping running. It's about the safety of the plants themselves. So it's just another bit of ammunition to remember when you get in arguments of pro-nuke people. You can say, okay, as the water dries up, how are you going to cool the damn things? And meanwhile, all the federal subsidies that have to go in just to build the plants that are not that dependable, where are you going to get it from? What happens when it's gone? What happens when a severe drought hits? What happens in 10 years you've built the damn plant and there's no water to cool it? Are you just going to say, oh, them's the risks? Doesn't matter if we kill, you know, if we kill everybody in the surrounding, you know, 50, 100 miles, but everyone else might get power. Just absolutely insane. And Bob's saying here, he says, Brown's Ferry had to shut down the North Alabama reactor last summer because the river water got too hot to cool the reactor. So it's not just purely the use of water as a heat sink. The heat, the water actually has to be below a certain temperature for it even to be able to transfer that heat. I mean, this is really simple logic. Or am I nuts? I don't think so. I know I can be a bit goofy sometimes, but that's a personality thing. It has nothing to do with the way my brain works. You know, it was one of the things that I was that I talk about with people here when John Howard and his completely biased, you know, task force on picking 50 sites or something for plants here in Australia. And they're calling for this stuff at the cost of billions to the taxpayer in subsidies just to build the damn things. And we're a country in extended drought. Does anyone ever think far enough ahead? And it's not like they can go and use the ocean water that surrounds this country. How much energy would you have to expend just to desalinate enough water to keep such a place running? And Bob, you're reading my mind. Most of these nuke plants do not make a profit. They don't. If it wasn't so subsidized, it would never, ever make a profit. But we're going to go to the phones. Our good friend, Alan the Trucker, is on the line. How are you going, my friend?
Hey, John. Hey, doesn't these weapons, warheads, come from spent uranium from nuclear power plants?
Yes, they do. Very often they do. And they go ahead.
I was going to say, if we don't have these nuclear power plants, how in the world are they going to make the weapons?
You got a point there, but I think there's enough waste material running around at the moment, mate, that they've got enough raw material to continue to make these absolutely horrendous devices that are, you know, and the armor that they make out of it that are slowly killing soldiers that are driving around in radioactive gear. It just absolutely blows my mind. And before I forget, whereabouts are you in the great land at the moment?
I'm in Louisville, Kentucky. And something messing up my sinuses here, running, making my eyes water. I'll be glad when I get away from this place. Maybe it's just a section of Louisville I'm at. I'm close to the airport.
If you think it's plant-based, you know, like a pollen thing, I'll give you a little hint, and it's worked great for me. If you go to a place that you're not accustomed to, and you start getting, you know, hay fever, runny eyes, that kind of thing, go find a natural health food store that has local unprocessed bee honey and have some tea with it, because the bees, local bees, create natural antibodies to the pollens of the local area. And you'd be amazed at how much relief you can get from just having a couple of cups of tea with local unprocessed honey.
That's a good idea. I've heard that before. I used to raise honeybees. That's an interesting hobby.
I was taught that trick when I moved to Chico, California, and I was just like, wow, why didn't I know this one before? And when you were on in the past, we were I was talking about the solar company that does, and I've been meaning to email this to you, that does the wafer system of solar panels. They're called Nano Solar. You can Google them and find information on. Yeah, Nano Solar. Those are the folks that are doing it.
Okay, I have to look that up. I like to see about putting enough on my roof that can run an air conditioner. Somebody was telling me the other day that I can't do it, but I don't always believe everybody I talk to. I'm hoping it'll work.
Yeah. I'll be curious to see what you come up with because I think it's very cool the concepts that you've got.
Yeah, and also you were talking about creating jobs with new technology. I was thinking that if we really start to get solar energy subsidized in this country, like it should be, then that'll create a lot of jobs because people have to install these solar panels on roofs, and then people have to maintain them. They have to train people to do this. And
you train people, you know, to put up and maintain, you know, wind turbines. My favorite technology, which is the solar geothermal combination plants. Like they have one in Spain, they built one in California, and they're building one in Melbourne. That is a closed system, but there are going to be people that are going to be needed to not only build it, but maintain it, and it's completely carbon free once it's built. So, you know, what's the problem? I think it's nothing but a scaremongering argument to get people who actually don't understand the issue to react. And that's all I think it is.
Yeah, I guess one of the big issues is it's one industry that's got everything monopolized against a whole bunch of smaller companies that need to get their foot in the door.
Absolutely, and unfortunately, we you know, here in Australia, over in the United States, coal is subsidized, and these new technologies aren't being subsidized, and it's just absolutely insane that we think that is a fair and level playing field. And I just got to tell you, Nanette also pops up in the chat and says, you should also try getting what she calls a neti pot to rinse your sinuses out. And it's a little pot that you put saline solution in and rinse out the sinus cavities a couple times a day, and it helps to pull the allergens out of your sinuses and should also give you some relief. You got to love Nanette. She's just awesome. She's got natural answers for everything.
Yeah, that sounds really good. I like natural remedies. It's called a nanopod, or that sounds like
a neti.
The internet.
Yeah, yeah. NETTIE pot.
Okay. And you get it at the health food store.
I guess. I reckon you Google it, you'll find it. But you know,
okay.
What was that?
I said that's honey you get at the health food store that you were saying.
Yeah, a natural food store or something like that, and you want to make sure that it's local bee honey, and as little processing as possible, because when they, you know, of course, you know, you homogenize things, you end up taking you know, bits out, so. You know, and Annette says you can find one of these little pots at any drugstore, so that ought to set you up. But I think you make a really good point, the fact that we would create new jobs and new technologies with these new technologies, and if we had a national strategy, a national plan to start implementing these things on a large scale, we could probably deal with a lot of our employment problems that we have. and the investment in the infrastructure, although it might not create the profits for King Cole and these other kind of corporate welfare queens and societal welfare queens, it will end up being good for the greater economy, I believe. I think, you know, we get off the oil standard, we won't have to fight all these stupid wars, whether they're justified or not. Think of the money the Treasury would save with that.
I think it's a driver. Sorry to interrupt you.
Go ahead. No. Go ahead, mate.
I was going to say that as a truck driver, I notice another type of pollution that really needs to be dealt with in the future, I hope, that people don't talk about, and that's light pollution.
Oh, you are not kidding.
Like 1,000 halogen white lights hitting you in the eyes when you're driving down the road. And what does that do to the animals at nighttime?
It causes breeding problems for some species. It also causes problems for some vegetation because they require a certain amount of darkness at a certain time of year to begin to flower, in which to create either their food or their seed to reproduce. So there are huge problems with light pollution, and there's quite a movement. It started here in Sydney, actually, just called Earth Hour. And a few cities in the United States and around the world have decided to join in on it this next year when it comes, where basically everyone signs up in the city, and for an hour, one night, everyone shuts off all the lights, inside and outside. And to see the difference in the sky, you know, it's kind of a global warming gesture, and I know it's a gesture, but it's...
I love that.
I think that there's something. The light pollution is not talked about enough. I tell you, Alan, I'm coming up against the end of things here, so I got to wrap up. It's always good to hear from you, man. You take care of yourself on that road, mate. I want to hear from you soon.
Okay, thanks. Have a good day.
You too, mate. I love when he calls. You just never know where he's going to call from. I got to post the photos one day of his van and some of the stuff that he's doing. And, you know, this is just, and you know, it's small form stuff like that as well that can make a huge difference to things. You know, coming up with, you know, new ideas and new ways of powering your life. You know, I just think it's fantastic. So, it's just groovy stuff. And I am really getting the impression that this year, we are going to see some real movement on these issues globally. I haven't even been able to talk about the EU has come up with a somewhat more grandiose plan on carbon reductions, and boy, has it got the Bush administration all kind of got their panties tied up in knots. They ain't happy about it. And some of the talk, and there's other talk going around, and I'll try and cover some of this next week. There's other talk going around that nations that are signed up, say, to Kyoto and are making their targets will start adding higher import tariffs on goods coming from countries that don't. And that would affect the United States. And I mean, if I've heard of any way to strong arm the United States into compliance, I think that's one of the most intelligent ways to do it. Say, hey, you're not playing ball. Your stuff's going to be more expensive to get into our country, even though you really don't make anything anymore. but I really do think it's going to be a big year. Now, a reminder, next week on the Monday show, it's going to be our annual Invasion Day show, known by the white people here as Australia Day. So it'll all be a bunch of jingoistic flag waving. Hopefully we won't have any nonsense like a rehash of the Cronulla riots like we had a couple of years ago. I'm hoping that people have gotten their heads around that, and we'll be seeing people taking the Australian flag and wearing it as Superman capes and underwear and bikinis and toilet paper to wipe their bums with and everything else, and making out like they're good little Australians. Anyway, you're going to want to tune in for that. It's going to be good. I think it's going to be really, really good. So, thanks to Nanette for the links for today. I think anything that's going to put Blankenship in a bad light is good by me. And anything that makes the coal companies pay out what they should be paying out is good in my book. Thanks to Bob Kincaid for producing today and all week. Thank you so much. Thanks to the chat room. You guys have been great this week. Had a really good crowd in there this week. And thanks to B1 Louder Productions, Mr. Scott Barry for the music, and the mods and the vloggers, and you know it. I love you guys. As we say here on Foxed Up, be good, be green. We'll see you next week.
I would tell you that sometimes it's easier to desire and pursue the attention and admiration of 100 strangers than it is to accept the love and loyalty of those closest to me. And I would tell you that sometimes I prefer to look at myself through someone else's eyes. Eyes that aren't clouded with the tears of knowing what an